Czechoslovakia was one of the first victims of the Nazis, and the backlash at the end of World War II was harsh and violent. And that backlash against the Nazi occupiers, Sudeten Germans and Czechs believed to have collaborated in some way, is the subject of US historian Benjamin Frommer's book, National Cleansing, Retribution Against Nazi Collaborators in Postwar Czechoslovakia. The book, which was recently published in Czech after its release in English, looks at the wild acts of revenge in the immediate weeks after the war, mostly against Sudeten Germans, and the attempt over the longer term to bring both them and Czech citizens before special courts and tribunals. The picture the author paints is of the initial reprisals being less haphazard than they have sometimes appeared in the past, of an astonishingly high number of executions and number of Czechs brought before regional courts and local tribunals on charges of collaboration. I asked Mr. Frommer how the subject had been treated before he got there.
Before 1989, or before the mid-1990s, there had really been virtually nothing written about the trials, a few sentences here and there in some general books, a couple of commentaries by people who had been involved in the trials, and one very slanted book from the 1960s by a Slovak prosecutor. But actually the regional treatments that have been done and the very good in-depth analyses came about actually later, at the same time as I was doing my own research.
And some of the findings of your book are quite, well, maybe not explosive, but quite astonishing in putting the Czech trials and cleansing into context against what happened in the rest of Europe.
In terms of the numbers, it's quite a high number. The numbers alone are not so different than other occupied countries. There were thousands, tens of thousands of trials again in Western Europe. But what's remarkable about the Czech trials, and Czech trials were governed by a different set of laws than Slovak trials, is the number of people executed. It was extraordinarily high for the number of people who lived in Bohemia and Moravia at the time, and especially the number of people who were executed from among those who were sentenced to death. Whereas in most countries in Europe, there were a large number of death sentences, but in fact, relatively few of them were actually carried out. In the Czech lands, 95% of the death sentences were carried out. An extraordinary number of executions, around 700, which is roughly very close to the number that took place in France, a country many times the size.
And what were the main reasons for that high number?
The main reason was this extraordinary aspect of the retribution law, which was written in London by Edward Beneš's government in exile, which was that executions had to be carried out within 2 hours of the death sentence. If the person who was sentenced to death asked for extra time, the execution would be put off for an hour, but otherwise it went ahead as planned. And so the executioner was on call whenever there was a capital trial, and very quickly it moved to the death of the convicted.
And also, one of the findings of the book seems to be that the sort of wild events in the immediate weeks, months after the war ended, the sort of retribution, the wild retribution that took place there, it wasn't quite so unplanned and wild maybe as people previously thought.
Certainly not. In fact, there's good evidence to the fact that Edward Beneš and his government in London expected there to be quite a degree of violence, and in fact welcomed it, because they wanted to get rid of the Germans of Czechoslovakia, and they were hoping that as many as possible would simply flee out of fear of violence in the spring of 1945. They also hoped that people would get their anger out, their passions out of the way, their sort of a let-off steam in the spring of 45, and therefore it would be easier to reestablish a government thereafter. Very much a sense that this was going to happen anyway, and no need to stand in the way of it. In addition to that, people like Clement Gottwald and communist leaders, but not only them, Prokop Tertina and Beneš himself, spoke in very inflammatory language in the spring of 1945 when they knew quite clearly what their encouragement of revenge against Germans was going to lead to, already was leading to at the time.
Much of your book deals with the so-called People's Courts, which existed for I think about a year and a half in the post-war period. What sort of conclusions did you come about then? Were they sort of weapons of the communists or not the communists? Were they fairly independent? Did they give even-handed legal judgments, or what were the main conclusions there?
Well, as originally envisioned, they were supposed to mete out very harsh justice, and the structure of them seems to indicate that, because they were people's courts with people's judges. Four of the five judges were actually not legally trained. They were supposed to be drawn from the resistance or those who had suffered at the hands of the Nazis. My conclusions are that there was an evolution over time, that one can't look at the people's courts in 1945 and look at them in 1947 and see them as the same. At the beginning, they did rule very harshly under the influence of the war and the passions, and handed down a lot of death sentences and convictions in the fall of 45. But as time went on, they became more judicious, you could say, more deliberate, and even more over time more lenient. And as time went on, in fact, continually and increasingly handed down judgments that were at odds with the communist view of collaboration during the war and guilt and innocence. One example of this is the National Court, which was the highest level of these courts in Prague, gave only 8 months in prison to the man who was formerly the head of the Czech League Against Bolshevism, the Nazi-allied anti-communist, anti-Soviet group. He essentially got time served.
But on other sort of issues, was the legal process seemingly fair? Mm-hmm. I mean, there seem to be some gender issues that are raised in the book, like women who slept with Germans, Nazi officers, etc., maybe getting more harsher treatment than men who might have done the same thing in the opposite way, and also the question about the treatment of informers that didn't always seem to be even-handed between various courts.
Mm-hmm. In a sense of absolute fairness or absolute justice, by any means, they certainly were not. And in fact, trials of Germans especially tended to be rushed affairs. In the borderlands, some of them took 5 minutes, and it sufficed to say that the person had been a ranking member of the Nazi Party for them to be convicted. Trials of Czechs tended to be fairer, take longer, involve more witnesses, and again, as time went on, these became more deliberate affairs. But there were definite discrepancies. The example you give, that women were far likely potentially to have a less favorable hearing before the court, though in fact they were far more likely to be, I would say, indicted and tried perhaps unjustly, because that shown that they were far more likely to be acquitted. In fact, their cases were far less likely, in cases of denunciation, to hold up before the court. Much of the injustice, much of the horrific injustice, the torture that occurred, the beatings, the fabrication of evidence, in fact, occurred long before trials, when the police, who were far more communized by this point in time, and also far more, in fact, self-selected than the judges, carried out horrific acts of violence in the spring of 45, in the summer, and the preparation of the trials were very flawed. The trials themselves were far more likely to be an attempt, a fairer attempt, I would say, despite all the problems within them.
Coming back to the actual book and the research you did, you drew on a lot of the archives, maybe some of the archives that hadn't been drawn on earlier?
1989 and the 90s opened up a huge amount of materials in all over Eastern Europe that allowed one to completely revise the history of the region, and I worked in a range of archives, from central authorities like the Ministry of Justice and Interior, which controlled the police, to the regional people's courts, and then what were the least fair, and that's, I think, what you mentioned in regards to fraternization of Czech women, and those were these local tribunals of offenses against national honor. And there were over 150 in the country, and they very much were local, often haphazard affairs, and especially those records. Many of the regional courts have not been studied, but especially what's in this book, the book that I wrote that does not appear in other histories, is this local level where up to 180,000 people, mainly Czechs, not Germans, were investigated and many of them tried and punished for so-called offenses against national honor. And that was very much new material.
Well, one thing that puzzles me a bit about this sort of period in the immediate aftermath of the Second World War until the communist takeover in February 1948 is the fact that maybe it's not been dealt with better by Czech historians over the recent decade or last 15, 20 years. Would you agree with that, or would you find that unfair?
To some extent, I think I would say it is unfair to the degree that coming out of 1989, there's an unlimited number of topics that had not been dealt with before. So to some extent, it would be difficult to get complete coverage in any sense. And I do rely heavily on Czech historians like Tomáš Staněk, who's the number one historian of the expulsion of the Germans, and Mečislav Borák, who has written on courts and other issues. And yet, to some extent, you're right that what has been lacking is more generally comprehensive surveys or broader investigations of larger topics. For example, there's still no good biography of Clement Gottwald 20 years after 1989. Some of this is changing, but Czech historians have traditionally, and with some very important exceptions, tended to write more focused studies of individual areas or certain movements. And a general history, for example, of Czechoslovakia is sorely needed by a Czech historian, because many of them that have been written abroad have serious flaws. So that, to some degree, I think is true, but there is very important work that is going on.
Are you working on other books on Czech history at the moment, or have you branched out into other areas?
I just finished up the past year I spent as a Fulbright scholar in the Czech Republic working on research for a new book, which is actually about the persecution of the Jews of Bohemia and Moravia during the war, during the Nazi occupation. And particularly, I'm interested in a subject that has not been investigated, which is what happened to Jews before they were deported to Terezin and to eastern spots in Poland and so on. What happened between the Munich Pact of 38 and their deportations in 1941, 43, 42, 43, 44, such that what was one of the most integrated, intermarried, secular as well as speaking Czech and German part of general society, how it was separated out, how it was removed almost totally by a series of measures that I investigate about how Jews could had restrictions on riding public transportation, could no longer go into certain streets, were removed from certain neighborhoods, couldn't go to the movie theater, couldn't go to the stock exchanges. And I'm interested in who came up with the idea, how they were implemented, and to what extent they were enforced, not just in Prague, but also in towns and villages throughout the Protectorate.